Football in Europe is sponsored by BetOnBrazil.com. It's the betting site for all sports punters with great odds, markets and offers.
Listeners to this podcast can now get up to £60 deposit match when you use the promo code FIE60. Just visit BetOnBrazil.com and enter promo code FIE60 when you deposit and we'll match your deposit up to £60. Also look out for our daily happy hour offers between 5pm and 6pm.
Sign up now at betonbrazil.com. Betonbrazil.com is for over 18s only. Betting should be fun, so please gamble responsibly.
You're listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
Hello and welcome to Football in Europe. I'm Rob Daly. With me is Chris Parrott. Chris, what are we talking about this week?
All of the abuse I got from my team of the season so far. Barcelona dropping points again. Julian Draxler with a brilliant debut. And we're recording this in sunny Spain.
We are. It is sunny, but it's cold.
And we're sitting on plastic chairs in the room because the noise of the road outside would be too much.
So we'll explain a bit more about why we're in Spain in a moment. But first, let's talk about your team of the season, Chris. Some people were taking you to task... for your crowbarring in of positions, how do you plead to putting Fabinho right back and Gaspar left back?
Probably guilty, but you know.
I thought you were going to defend yourself.
No, well, I mean, it's fair enough, but you know, it's only a bit of fun, isn't it? But no, Fabinho, I fully accept, is playing in central midfield, and he's not. He hasn't played right back, but he can play right back. We saw that. He's played right back a lot, so I'm sure, you know, great players fit into positions.
All right.
But, you know, yes, would that team look a bit funny on the pitch? It would. But I still think, formation-wise, you can have the 4-1-3-2 could become the next big thing. It's
okay.
Attacking.
I don't think so. I don't think anyone's going to be playing that. So, Chris, last night, we've watched so much football here.
We have.
The last thing we watched was... Villarreal Barcelona last night. We saw Celta Vigo Malaga, and then we just kept watching, and then we watched Barcelona Villarreal. Villarreal Barca, I should say, which finished 1-1. Villarreal going in through Soriano, but Lionel Messi with a stunning free kick in the 90th minute, and we were saying when he was lining it up, we felt he was going to score that.
Last minute free kick. You know this is going to go in the top corner, and it did, but it went in the wrong top corner, if you like. It went goalkeeper's side. The keeper... I think because he was so worried that basically if it went over the wall, it was going to go into the goalkeeper's left. So he took at least two giant leaps to the left-hand side. And then it went in to the top corner where he was.
He was so in the top corner. Do you think he would have saved it, Asensio, if he had stayed?
Yeah, I think he probably would. But I think you have to give credit to Messi as well. It was beautiful. But ultimately, it was drop points. They should definitely have had a couple of penalties, particularly one. I mean, who was it? I think it was... The shot was blocked. I can't remember which Barcelona player it was.
I think Messi was the first
one.
Yeah,
and quite clearly the guy was on the floor and he moved his hand and it deflected up over the cross. But it was
Well, it was Bruno almost saved the ball.
Exactly.
That's the extent to which he put his hand out.
And, you know, I'm sure over the season Barcelona will get plenty of big decisions going their way. But on Sunday, they probably deserved, because of that, to win the game. Although Villarreal... For large parts were more than their equal, and it means that Barcelona are a third behind Sevilla, who were brilliant on Saturday. Ben Yedder scored a hat-trick. They absolutely thumped Real Sociedad, and it means that Real Madrid are 6 points clear, and they're five points clear of Barcelona. So great weekend for Real Madrid, who I think now have equaled Barcelona's all-time unbeaten run of 39 games.
That's right, yeah, they have done after that 5-0 win against Granada. A quick thing still on Barcelona, because that game, of course, coming 3 days after they lost to Bilbao, to Athletic Club in the Copa del Rey 2-1, Athletic Club finishing the game with 9 men and Barca still lost the game. But Gerard Piqué, you just reminded me there, over the decisions, the handballs, two clear handballs, and I think they were both from Bruno, from memory. He apparently on the way out gestured up to the director's box towards officials and said, like, did you see those decisions or something like that? He was really... I mean, Piqué's the most outspoken, perhaps, of the playing personnel.
But this is the Madrid conspiracy that everyone in Barcelona has. I think referees make mistakes. The idea that it comes from the top is almost too much to think about because, yeah, what's the point? I think if you supported Granada, you would probably think that Barcelona get their fair share of decent decisions, favourable decisions, particularly at home over the course of a season. But last night they were definitely denied one, probably two penalties, but that's football, isn't it? To have this conspiracy, I don't think it does anybody any good.
Particularly. No. So Barcelona currently, as Chris said, 5 points behind Real Madrid in third position. Real Madrid top, Sevilla second. I mean, what a fantastic season they're having under Sampaoli. We've talked a lot about that, of course. Barcelona do play PSG in the Champions League when they get back underway. Many of Europe's top leagues are still away, but France is back because of cup football. And it meant that PSG could give a debut to Julian Draxler, who they've just signed for about €40 million from Wolfsburg.
Yeah, and what a debut it was. He scored, and they hit seven past a fellow Ligue 1 team. It was more like Paris Saint-Germain of last season, you know, when they were doing that. Maybe not scoring seven week in and week out, but scoring four and five. Great start to 2017. Interesting with Draxler. Part of me thinks today need another attacking midfielder like that. I think Hesse is going to go back to Las Palmas on loan. Di Maria hasn't been great. I remember Kluivert coming out, who's now the sporting director.
That's right, yeah.
And saying that wasn't one of the positions they wanted. They wanted a striker. They may well still get a striker in this window. But you hope that Julian Draxler can fulfil that undoubted potential he has. It didn't quite work at Wolfsburg. Did in flashes. And now he's, you know, it's a big price tag, big reputation, big club. You hope that he can shine, and of course he can play in the Champions League. So he'll be playing against Barcelona next month, and it's a big test for him, I think. Can he be consistent and consistently? And maybe in Ligue 1 he will be, but whether he can be in the Champions League is a whole different kettle of fish.
I mean, there has been question marks about his attitude in general, about wanting to leave clubs, even when he left Schalke, hinting that that was maybe a mistake that when he left his boyhood club, effectively. But I also wonder, with signing Draxler, and you mentioned the attacking midfield options, what this means for Ben Arfa. And they're not like for like. Like Draxler, we saw at the European Championships in the summer, was playing left wing and looked very dangerous for Germany. He clearly can play number 10, as he's done for both Schalke and Wolfsburg. I mean, what do you think now for Ben Arfa? You're talking about Hesse leaving. It's probably bad news for him, isn't it?
Yeah, it probably is. You get the picture that Unai Emery doesn't really fancy him. I think for all of Sevilla and Paris Saint-Germain's attacking strengths, there is that collective spirit that I think Emery demands, and whether he feels that Ben Arfa doesn't quite give him that, be a shame. You know, funny things that happen. Could you see Ben Arfa back at Nice? But then Paris Saint-Germain aren't going to want to sell him now because they're a title rival. So
yeah,
Ben Arfa might. You know, you always felt he only had one good consistent season, and you're playing in Nice. They're in Europe. You just stay put. I understand the lure of going to Paris and the undoubted pay rise, but do you
the
not
bunts.
Just yeah the bunts? But do you not just think we suddenly turned all East London, mate? But do you not just think just stay at Nice for at least another season?
But he's late 20s. He's probably thinking, you know, this is.
If he has, I'm sure he's not short of a bob or two. And if he has one more good season at Nice. Then he definitely gets a move to Paris Saint-Germain. He might even get that move that he wanted to Barcelona, which isn't going to happen. But I just, when players who have been so unsettled at so many clubs finally fall upon a club where it's going well, you do just think them and their agent should just calm down for a couple of years and just play regularly and enjoy playing football.
Yeah, and he seemed to be doing that at Nice anyway, who might pip PSG to the title despite losing their best player and manager. Okay, next, we're going to give you a bit more of an explanation as to why we're in Spain.
Follow the Football in Europe account on Audioboom for the latest podcasts, interviews and special features.
Football in Europe is sponsored by BetOnBrazil.com. It's the betting site for all sports punters with great odds, markets and offers. Listeners to this podcast can now get up to £60 deposit match when you use the promo code FIE60. Just visit betonbrazil.com and enter the promo code FIE60 when you deposit, and we'll match your deposit up to £60. Also look out for our daily happy hour offers between 5 p.m. and 6 p.m. Sign up now at betonbrazil.com. BetOnBrazil.com is for over 18s only. Betting should be fun, so please gamble responsibly.
For more, head to the website, footballineurope.co.uk.
OK, Chris, it's a bit of a shorter podcast today, and thanks to everyone who does tweet us at FIE Podcast and leaves us a review on iTunes as well. You're just reviewing Rich Allen's tweets to you, so they're about your team of the year. Thank you very much, Rich, for tweeting in, and everyone who did. Chris, do you want to explain what we're doing in Marbella? We're currently in Marbella, and the reason the podcast is a little bit shorter because I've got to go fly home.
Marbs.
Lots of carbs before Marbs and during Marbs, sadly.
No carbs before Marbs.
So, why are we here?
For a lovely winter break in the sun. Much like many of the European football clubs. We have been here commentating, which is a lovely January expedition. We went to Turkey last season, but now all of the clubs, obviously because of the things that are happening in Turkey, unfortunately, basically everyone comes to, if they don't go to Qatar and America, they come to Marbella or to Portugal. So we've both been, you've commentated on two matches so far, I've done one, and I'm doing Werder Bremen against Club Bruges this evening on Monday. So basically all the clubs come here and train in basically every European country at some stage, depending on when their winter break is, and then they play friendly games against each other, because whilst training is good, you also want that bit of game time before you go into the second half of the season. So that's why we're here. It's been excellent, and you can tell, this is age-old debate about winter breaks in England, but when you actually come out here and you see the time and the environment that they have together as football clubs, it should be a no-brainer, even if it's only 2 weeks in England. Just, I think the coaches would love it. They get proper time. I was doing Augsburg, who have just appointed Manuel Baum as their full-time coach. He had two games in caretaker capacity. He's got 2 weeks with his new players here.
Mm.
You know, that is absolutely perfect. You never, ever get that time in England.
No, I mean, now's the busiest time of year. If you're a club like Hull, you're right in the middle of all those fixtures. It's an interesting thing, and in Germany they have a just over 4-week, 5-week break almost some seasons. So there's a lot of German clubs here. There's a lot of Eredivisie clubs here as well. How did Augsburg and AZ play? What's the intensity of that game? Was it fairly slow?
Probably 75% intensity, I reckon. Still a decent watch, a good watch. It finished 1-1, my game. Raul Bobadilla came back after he's been out for about most of the season, actually. So that's a big boost for Augsburg if he can be fit for the second half of the season, because they could still be dragged into that Bundesliga relegation scrap. AZ's basically, each team, I don't know what it's like in your games, but they field totally different 11s in the first and the second half, which is a commentator's nightmare at times, because it means...
Oh, it's horrendous,
There's about 27 players that ultimately play. But Wout Weghorst, who's... was their signing as their replacement for Vincent Janssen, who scored 27 goals last season.
So a proper striker.
Proper striker. They signed him from Heracles in the summer. Scored 10 goals in all competitions. I was speaking to a couple of the RZ coaches, and they were saying how he's got better as the season went on, and he was excellent. Big, powerful, sort of a typical English centre forward, but with quick feet, clearly intelligent, and he finished his chance superbly. You can see that if not another Dutch club, you can see potentially if he goes and scores 10 goals in the second half of the season, that he would be someone that I'm sure many scouts are watching.
I wonder if there's going to be an apprehension about Eredivisie strikers again, because it hasn't happened for Janssen. And I think he got taken off, didn't he, during the FA? You watched a bit of Spurs Villa.
Yeah, I think maybe Shearer called him a poor man's Roberto Soldado as well, which...
oh my God. That's harsh, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Because Janssen's had one good, and in particular one good half a season. Was it too much to expect him to come to the Premier League and instantly sort of hit the ground running and scoring goals like Van Nistelrooy did, perhaps?
Yeah, well, particularly when you are backup for 60% of the time.
Yeah, Kane's your number one guy, isn't he?
Kane's your number one guy. So, you know, and Soldado struggled, and now Janssen struggled. So, you know, you hope that Janssen can turn it around. If not, you also have to look at Poch, and, you know, they get most of their signings right, but they haven't necessarily got the backup to Harry Kane right yet. Mm. But here, it was a good game. And
what kind of player is Weghorst in terms of a striker?
He's a guy who you can see is very much suited to playing that one up front with the three guys behind him.
Physical,
tall, but quite strong. And as I said, really quick feet, so the ball comes into him and immediately he's not just looking to hold it up, he's looking to play a 1-2. Very impressive. He came on at half-time and they were a totally different team when he was on the pitch. And along with Jahan Bakash, who's been good, who's an Iran international. Increasingly getting quite a few Iran internationals now. When we cover Russian football, there's a couple at Rostov. And you think they've got about five or six players playing at a very good level now in European leagues. He's another one I think to watch.
What position is it?
Right wing, or it's, you know, the right of the
three.
The three drifts in. You know what it's like. You know they don't do formations now, Rob. That's why I did my team of the season so far like that. That's only on paper for idiots at the start of games.
Well, there were a number of Bundesliga clubs like Augsburg that changed their manager relatively before the winter break, and I think largely because it is that thing where you can regroup.
Definitely.
And we saw Schubert go at Gladbach, and Norbert Meyer didn't go too long ago at Darmstadt. Seven managers have actually lost their job in the Bundesliga so far this season. One man who's in no danger of losing his job, despite the fact that Dortmund are a little bit short in the Bundesliga this season, is Tuchel, Thomas Tuchel. And I covered PSV against Borussia Dortmund. A great game. There was loads of penalties. Some of them are in like, was yours in the Marbella Football Centre?
Yes.
Do you explain what that centre, because it's a fascinating place.
That is. There's basically, in the hills just outside of Marbella, there is a training centre with probably about 10 immaculate pitches and a clubhouse. And so, yeah, your game was in a proper football stadium with fans. Mine was basically just on a training pitch. There was probably about 100 people there. And then on the pitch behind, Mönchengladbach were training. You could hear Dieter Hecking shrieking, trying to get his new ideas across, having just been appointed. Another guy who's coming out here with 10 days to really drill his side, whereas, as you mentioned, you know, the new Hull coach or the new Swansea manager, mid-season, how do you get those ideas across?
Yeah, it's very tough.
And then two pitches behind, Werder Bremen were playing, and NEC Nijmegen were playing on the pitch just the other side of my game. So there was whistles going off all of the time.
So it's a nightmare for a commentator.
Yeah, maybe for the players as well, because it's like, was that a foul here? No, it's, you know, I don't know.
Dieter Hecking telling someone off.
Yeah, absolutely. But so, yeah, and, you know, it's a facility. It was great. You walk through the clubhouse and everyone signs the shirt that's ever been there. And they're all on the wall. There's not enough space, but, you know, there's like the Mexico national team through to Shakhtar Donetsk.
Sure.
All these people. So it does feel like the hub of European football, Marbella.
Yeah, I came here a couple of years ago and it was mainly Russian clubs who did a thing with Dinamo Moscow.
Yeah.
But apparently, I was speaking to someone and apparently the Russian clubs, because they wouldn't go to Turkey last year because of the political situation, apparently a lot of the Russian clubs have gone back. This winter,
Turkey.
Apparently, yeah.
Interesting.
So, very, very interesting indeed. Of course, Russia on a more prolonged winter break. Quickly on the winter break thing, a part of the argument against a winter break in England, Chris, is that people would be worried that the English clubs, Premier League clubs, would go and play lucrative friendlies. Mm. And some Bundesliga clubs do go to the States, raise the profile of the league, make some money. Like, I think Leverkusen, especially when you have someone like Chicharito, a Mexican in your team, going to that part of the world's an attractive idea. Do you think the Premier League teams would do this? They play quiet friendlies as you saw in the Marbella Football Centre, or would they be trying to pack somewhere in Doha, 50,000, or America, Australia, stuff like that?
I'd like to say that they would do what Borussia Dortmund have done. I think we all know they probably would go to China or wherever the marketing team went. But that for me is up to them. If they want to do that and exhaust themselves, fine. That shouldn't be why you don't have a winter break.
Sure.
You know, if you have the winter break and they decide to go and do that, more for them, because that's not what it's for. You know, I know Bayern are in Doha, but that's a training camp. Paris Saint-Germain went to Tunisia for a friendly. As you said, Leverkusen are in Orlando, but they might have one game, but they are training. And, you know, as you said, if Premier League clubs did that, so be it.
Didn't you even say Inter came out here?
Yeah, Inter were here in Marbella for about 3 or 4 days because, you know, they're back underway. We'll talk about Serie A in a moment. But yeah, you know, so these big international football clubs, if you like, particularly Dortmund and Inter, they come here and you just think, if Premier League sides did want to chase the cash and raise their profile even more, they can do that. But I think the clever clubs would would decide that's for the summer.
Okay, that's interesting. We'll see if that we ever actually get that in England.
We won't.
Okay, so Dortmund did beat PSV 4-1. Thomas Tuchel did that thing where he changed the team completely at half-time. Dortmund have a couple of weeks until they're back in action. PSV decided to play their strongest team effectively for the 90 minutes. But the one player they didn't include in that game, and we saw goals from Cherler, Royce, who had a penalty saved by Yeron Zoot, and Shinji Kagawa. One player I wanted to pick out in particular was Emre Moore, the Turkish international that Dortmund signed, wearing number 9, but he's an attacking midfield player who hasn't played much so far, but he came on and he lit up the whole game. And yes, you know, it's only a friendly, blah, 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 but it was the kind of performance I'm like, I hope that guy gets more game time. He made a wonderful third goal for Schürrle where he dribbled and clipped it over the back, and in the end, PSV did resort to sort of just booting him up in the air. But he's another one of the brilliant teenagers. Pulisic scored, another one of the excellent youngsters they've got on the ranks. So it was great to see Dortmund, and amazing support as well. I think a lot of fans do come out here.
Yeah. Another thing, if Premier League teams came here, they could play, you know, your venue, you reckon there was probably 2,000 or 3,000 for that PSV game. If you had a Manchester City or someone like that, then, you know, you can guarantee that there'd be plenty of guys and their families would be like, well, we'll go for a bit of winter sun as well.
Yeah, yeah, there were so many people there. The other thing I want to talk about, the next day PSV played Freiburg. Freiburg played two friendlies in one day and played completely different teams, but both with first team squad members. So they won in the morning against Vaduz, and then they played PSV with something closer to a second string, and it was PSV's second string. But interestingly for PSV is they started Marco van Ginkel, who's back on loan at PSV from Chelsea. Van Ginkel scored a sensational goal from 20 yards out to put PSV in front, was probably the best player on the pitch, and finished the game with the captain's armband. And it's an interesting move for Van Ginkel, Chris, because I looked up 3 Premier League games for Chelsea. I don't know if any of them have been starts so far this season. And it seems that maybe he's not right for that level, because that's 3 coaches now that have looked at Van Ginkel and said, no, not ready for Chelsea yet.
Yeah, exactly. And they do have a plethora of options, don't they? Including a lot of these young guys that they clearly now Conte does want to give a chance.
The Loftus-Cheek who played it in the FA Cup.
Chalabar, you know, they've recalled Nathan Aki. I know it's a different position to Van Ginkel, but I think that's the way. And as you said, what Conte, Mourinho and Hiddink, and Hiddink with all of his PSV and all of his Dutch connections. Yeah, that maybe, you know, you do have to trust coaches because they do see these players in training every day.
I suppose Victor Moses is almost an anomaly in a sense, because I thought, why did Chelsea keep him? What are they up to? And then he did somehow break into the team this season.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you talk about that because it's the anomaly as opposed to the norm. But, you know, maybe Van Ginkel's level is PSV, and, you know, they are a huge club, of course. But I was looking at, for my RZ game, I think, in the coefficient, the Dutch league is 13th now.
Oh, what is it that low?
Which is below.
So explain what that means. Basically means that by the standings, it's the 13th best league in Europe, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's based on lots of things, mostly how they perform in European competition. But of course, it's a double-edged sword because the lower you get, the fewer places you get in European competition. So it's harder then. So you really need a club to do very well.
Mm.
And this season, I think AZ and Ajax are the only two teams in Europe. PSV finished bottom of the Champions League, so out behind Rostov. They didn't even get third. And final finished behind Fenerbahce and United. But the Dutch league, you 3 European champions there. And AZ reached the final of the UEFA Cup. Who did they lose to?
Oh, your boys.
Yeah, exactly.
Your boys.
Got that.
But Chris was going to get Ipswich Town in no matter what.
But I think they're behind the Czech top flight and the Swiss top flight.
That cannot... I suppose Basel have been good.
Yeah.
And the Czech top flight, would Pilsen have done enough to sort of drive that up? Maybe.
I think Sparta Prague reached the quarterfinals last season.
Yeah, sorry, of Europa League.
But, you know, like these leagues are growing, and that's what, you know... And then this is the argument about, well, if Van Ginkel goes to the Eredivisie and becomes the best player, great in the short term, but what does that do for... I don't know.
Well, he scored... Difficult. What's interesting, I was looking at Van Ginkel, and he scored 8 goals in 13 league games online at PSV last season. And for a central midfielder, that probably tells me you're too good for this league if you're a midfielder scoring that many. But he's had his loans, hasn't he, at Stoke and Milan. And I just, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. But I do really rate Marco van Ginkel, and PSV are delighted to have him back. Absolutely. OK, Chris, let's finish with a bit of Serie A, because Serie A is one of those back underway. And Juventus have won 26 home games in a row.
Yeah, they beat Bologna 3-0. As comfortable as that sounds, it was. Higuain scored two goals. Big second half of the season for them, isn't it? You know, I think they're going to win the title again. It will be closer, but I think one imagines they're going to have enough. How far can they go in the Champions League will be fascinating. That will be a sixth Scudetto in a row, I think.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, record.
Yeah, I mean, which is, you know, they're phenomenal. And as you said, at home, it's absolutely obscene to win 26 home games in a row. I mean, it's almost unheard of. And one line as well, Arik Milik may be back very soon.
So it looked like a long-term injury, didn't it, at first?
Well, he did his ACL, Higuain's replacement, started the season really, really well. A terrible injury to get, but everyone thought, OK, he's going to be out till, I don't know, March time. But reports, and only reports, that he could even be in the matchday squad for this weekend. I mean, I think that would be more just to say, look, everyone, he's back. He's not going to play. That would be obscenely quick to get back. But if he, for Napoli's point of view, you know, Dries Mertens has stepped up, but they did struggle to, having lost Higuain, to then lose his replacement. Be great for Milik and be great for Napoli, who, of course, play Real Madrid next month.
They do, yeah. Juventus to win the league.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the way it's looking at the moment, and Juve will mount that Champions League push that they're definitely going for. Chris, I think we're done. Anything else you wanted to talk about?
Well, we need to get in the pool, Rob.
Oh, no, it's too cold for that, I need to go. Cold. I mean, I'm literally looking at... Yeah, I need to leave.
I mean, it's barely T-shirt weather, so it's not... So don't feel jealous, everyone. And at my game, I had a coat and a scarf on.
OK, thank you very much for joining us. Remember, we'll be back next Monday. It'll be a regular show next week with guests and a proper studio and everything at FIE Podcast. And please, if you do have the time, leave us a review on iTunes.
This is Football in Europe.